It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
An early childhood taxing district, what on earth is that?
The latest in politics and world affairs.
I don't think that we should be passing legislation that is so complicated that people kind of throw up their hands and say, oh, I can't understand it.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
It is not fair that just because you're a big business that you get a break on this and the little guy doesn't.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation. Happy Friday. Producer Steve, you have made it.
You put me in this pickle every Friday, because all I can think about is 72 hours later.
Oh, you're just Mr. Optimistic here. But
no, there's a lot to be optimistic about. So
that's for sure. So welcome to the show. We're going to have a conversation. We are looking at these issues, trying to bring truth and clarity to these issues, and also to talk about some positive, hopeful things, because my goodness gracious, are we not just being bombarded with things that are putting fear and pessimism into us, and we need to be inoculated against all of this fear-mongering that is occurring with politicians and bureaucrats and interested parties. Yes, I'm Kim Munson. Welcome to the show. Be sure and check out my website, kimmunson.com. Sign up for my email newsletter. I continue to see more and more of you join up on that. And we'll send our newsletter out typically on Sundays to apprise you of what's coming up in the week. And each of you listeners, you are treasured. You are valued. Today, strive for excellence. You've got a purpose. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. And also want to say thank you to this great group of people on this team, and that is Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie. Greatly appreciate getting to work with you, Steve, and the team every day.
Well, again, you are the fearless leader, but you're right. Everybody you just mentioned has their hands in this operation on a daily basis to make it go.
And I also want to say thank you to each of my sponsors. As many of you know, I purchase my airtime, which is great. It means I have full editorial control over the subject matter and the guests. But it also means that I have valued sponsors and would appreciate for you to go to my website and contribute as well. But these sponsors are all, I can vouch for every one of them. That's Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance. Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, will be talking with him at the bottom of the hour. Hooters Restaurants, Susan Kochevar with the historic 88 Drive-In Theater, the Harris Family, Liberty Oilfield Services, Jay Davidson, First American State Bank, Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial with all of your mortgage questions, Water's Edge Winery, Liberty Toastmasters, and Chris Cantwell, Trans World Business Advisors. Each and every one of these people I highly recommend and endorse and appreciate their partnership in keeping this show on the air. As we look at these issues, we look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And socialism ultimately comes down to force. And as driving in, Steve, today I was thinking of things that I'm grateful for. And one of them is I'm very grateful that the veil is off on the real effects of government control and socialism right here in Colorado. And if you want to know what socialism and the Green New Deal look like, this is what it looks like right now, where there's not enough or where there's, you know, empty shelves at the grocery store, and capitalism is the thing that has provided more people, lifted them out of poverty, and provided goods and services. And so I'm very grateful that we are actually seeing what occurs under socialism and the Green New Deal. Now, Patty and I have been talking, and there's so much fear-mongering out there in the news cycle that we wanted to share a couple of really great things. This is from Travel and Leisure. People are putting their Christmas lights back up to spread cheer during this coronavirus. And it says a little Christmas cheer is good to keep your spirits up, even if it's in March. And here, I guess, according to people, lots of people are opting to put their Christmas lights back up in the last few days in an effort to help boost community morale in the wake of this Wuhan COVID-19 coronavirus. Social media users have been using the hashtags, hashtag Lights for Life, and Corona Kindness and posting photos of their festive lights.
I don't want to put you in bad company, but you're right up there with Joe Biden. The other day he made reference to his former job and he called it the O'Biden-Bama administration.
You mean the fact that I'm having trouble pronouncing words today?
No, let's just carry on.
But, you know, I love the creativity. And then, Steve, you came across an article that they're going to be lighting the Christmas star back up down in Castle Rock, I guess.
Hats off to the City Council of Castle Rock. That star was originally put up in 1936 as a beacon of hope during the Depression. And these people have basically, you know, dusted off that whole mindset and said, we need a symbol of hope for today, and they're going to light up the star.
I love it. I love it. So let's jump in here with our inspiration. And this is from Rudyard Kipling. He was an English journalist, short story writer, poet, and novelist. He was born in India, which inspired much of his work. His works of fiction include The Jungle Book, which was written in 1894, Kim in 1901, and many short stories, including The Man Who Would Be King, which he wrote in 1888. He was born, that can't be right, says he was, oh, you know, here we go. He was born in 1865, and he died in 1936 at the age of 70. And he says, I keep six honest serving men. They taught me all I know. Their names are what and why, when and how, and where and who. As we are going through all of this, I think that it's really important to be asking those questions. Steve, are you ready for the funnies? I'm going to go ahead and hit it here.
Oh, bless us.
Okay. The best thing about hand sanitizers isn't the hygiene. It's that everyone walks around like they're hatching a dastardly plan. Ha ha. So let's jump over here with Brad Beck, my good friend. He is one of the co-founders of Liberty Toastmasters. And Brad Beck has come up with an idea in this time of the coronavirus. Brad Beck, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Kim. How are you?
I am good. You have come up with a very creative idea.
Yes, I have. Well, I think it is. You know, I always like to start with yes. And unfortunately, my daughter recently, one of my daughters, was laid off from work. She's in the hospitality industry. And being a good dad, I gave her some money to tide her through. But then I started thinking of all the thousands and thousands of folks out there in the hospitality industry, whether they're at a hotel, restaurant, bar, and how the heck are they going to get through this? And so I decided to take a white envelope and put some money in it and stick it in the door with a little note that said, for your employees. And so I did a little video on it, and I hashtagged it the White Envelope Project and thought I'd do a little video, put it online, and boy, did I get a lot of folks responding and sharing all over the country. And I think it's a great way for people to just say, hey, we appreciate you, and you know, you'll get through this. The restaurants hopefully will come back. And it's a way to get those folks that work for tips, and you know, you can buy gift cards, you can go in there and get takeout, but they're going to need some money to get them through that. And I'm blessed that I have a job, at least today, and I can put in 5, 10, 15 bucks and give it to somebody else who is less fortunate at this time.
Well, and, you know, we are Americans, and that is typically how we've gotten through these things, is by working together. Instead of looking to government to take care of everything. And, you know, we've continued to see public policy that has moved more and more to more and more government control. And I think on the short term, you know, what's happening in Washington, D.C., government in times of crisis, I think, should step in and try to, you know, reduce this panic. I think a lot of this panic, though, is being fomented by politicians and bureaucrats and interested parties. And so during this time, we need to stay calm. We need to carry on. And I think it would be great if people, you know, did just what you're doing with your White Envelope Project, Brad Beck.
Well, I think, you know, you got to think different in these times. You got to think positive. One of the things I went back to is a great book I read years ago, and I'm rereading it chapter by chapter, from Michael Mihalko. It's Michalko, in his book Thinker Toys. And it's how to think differently, creatively in business. And if you look at the ways that people are wallowing in all this news cycle of the Wuhan virus and how it's getting people depressed, you got to look back and say, okay, what are your fears? And then what's the opposite of fear? And there's exercises in this book that I'm starting to use again to get my mind wrapped around it and to think creatively. You know, every morning I get up and I read something positive. I try to write something positive. I'll prepare for the day. I'll create. I'll try to get something going that's positive. And one of my business gurus, Jeffrey Gidmer, does this every day. He's been doing it for years, and you know, he's written dozens of books. And it's amazing how if you look at the world positive instead of turning on the news first thing you wake up, but do something for yourself. Start with the most important person in the world, yourself, and then you can do things for your family, you can do things for your friends, you can do things for your community. And so I try to start with yes, and what are the things I can do, and what are the things that others can do to help people who are less fortunate than us?
Well, and as we go through this, this is day 4 of the restaurants being closed down. I think in a couple of weeks we'll have a handle on what's really going on with this Wuhan virus. And so, Brad Beck, thank you so much. I'm going to get to see you virtually tomorrow for our Liberty Toastmasters meeting. And I think that's going to be quite an adventure, Brad, so it'll be a lot of fun.
It'll be fun. It'll be different. I've not done it before, so I'm looking forward to it as well.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Brad Beck. And
he is
a co-founder of Liberty Toastmasters. Check out LibertyToastmasters.org. Just go to Toastmasters, and I think you can find it there. We're going to go to break. Before we do that, just as we know, we need to buckle down and, as Brad said, help our restaurants, bars, and taverns here in Colorado. With Governor Polis and Mayor Hancock's edict to close dine-in options for individuals, restaurant workers are facing some lean times. And so restaurants are getting creative, and Hooters Restaurants is a valued partner of mine and really support my shows. So let them know how much you appreciate their sponsorship by stopping by and picking up dinner to take home, or you can have Hooters wings delivered to your front door. Try their original wings or some of their delectable smoked wings, which have half the calories. And you can find all that information out at orderhooters.com. I believe that's orderhooters.com. We're going to go to break. When we come back, Colorado Representative Kim Ransom, my representative, she's a member of the Joint Budget Committee. She has some updates on what is happening regarding the Colorado budget. We'll be right back.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email kim@kimmunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim@kimmunson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's kimmunson, MONSON.com. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. I'm very pleased to have on the line with me my representative, and that is Kim Ransom. She's on the Joint Budget Committee down at the legislature. And be sure and check out my show recap at my website from yesterday. A second segment, Kim kind of set up what was going on with the budget, and we are so jammed up with so much going on the show. You need to go back and listen to that because we need to talk about new things this morning. So, Representative Kim Ransom, welcome.
Good morning, Kim. Thank you so much for having me again.
Yes, and we had talked a bit about the forecasts are certainly changing because of the edicts from Governor Polis and Mayor Hancock to basically shut down the hospitality industry, which is going to affect revenue. So we kind of set that up. Where should we go from here, Kim?
Well, first I need to just begin with letting you know that things change day to day, actually hour to hour, things are changing. You probably heard yesterday afternoon that we have had a verified case of the virus diagnosed in one of the members in the legislature, meaning that pretty much everybody was exposed, potentially.
Okay.
I have to say nobody knows for sure when she actually came down with it, but in any event, we do wish her the best. I actually am hoping and praying for a swift recovery.
Right.
But with all that, we are probably, well, I've actually received notification that we will not have the budget balanced on the 30th as we had originally been shooting for. So the budget committee was actually going to meet down at the Capitol all next week, working on the final balancing efforts of, you know, making the cuts that we had to, and that has been delayed by at least a week.
Okay.
That being said, we still are working on it, because obviously with things changing the way that they change, we cannot just wait for more numbers to come in. We need to be working with what we have now.
Okay.
So with that, I know I mentioned that we had received the forecast with some very much lowered expectations of revenue over the next quarter. And that once we started working with the numbers and looking at what we've already approved and bills that have been passed since last year that statutorily should be implemented, we are at a deficit of what we need. Excuse me, this is a lowered growth. Remember, I think we talked about that uh-huh. We're lowering the growth, the rate of growth, not necessarily lowering the total budget amount. It looks like we are going to have to cut out somewhere in the area of $900 million of what we had approved and what we thought we had available to spend. So there will be cuts made in things that we've already approved this year, because remember, we've already gone through line item setting where we went through the budget line by line and voted on each line.
Now, how big is the budget, Kim? What's the proposed budget?
We don't have the final number yet. Somewhere in the range of $33 billion, $32 to $33 billion, somewhere in there.
Okay, but it does look like there'll have to be $900 million in cuts then. So that means that it means that some of the programs that may have or the laws that have been passed putting in programs, there's not going to be money for that, and there's probably not going to be money for the new stuff that's being proposed down there, right?
That is correct. Anything new that bills that are currently in the pipe, bills that have been introduced and maybe even passed through one house, possibly even signed by the governor, if there's not money for them, they cannot be implemented. And so those are some hard decisions that the legislature has to make. And remember, the Joint Budget Committee proposes the budget, but the legislature still must vote on it and approve it. So there is a process still ahead of us to get this done, to get this finalized.
Okay, so the Joint Budget Committee is proposing this budget. What does that deliberation look like by the representatives then? Where is that at? Is that on the House floor? Or where is that exactly?
Well, yes. The budget. Once the Joint Budget Committee comes up with the proposed budget, which we are required to do, then it goes to, this year it goes to the House first, and we rotate that. So last year the Senate started. This year the House will start it, and the House gets it for a full week, because remember, it has to be introduced, it has to be heard in at least one committee, it has to then receive second reading on the floor. That is where all of the members are able to propose amendments. That is usually a very long night.
Sure.
We usually have amendment day. It often lasts 8, 10, 12 hours of debates, proposing sometimes 100 or more amendments to the budget, because every member wants to look. They want to look at items that affect their district. They want to look at items that are part of their belief system, part of their agenda, what people came to the Capitol to try to accomplish. So everybody has the opportunity to offer amendments. Those are debated and voted on second reading, and then the entire budget on a separate day from second reading, on third reading will be the final passage, which is the recorded vote. Those are the where our names light up on the board.
Uh-huh.
And right. So generally it's 1 week in the House and then 1 week in the Senate to go through all those steps.
Okay. So and what is our fiscal year? When does this have to be ready to go?
Well, the current fiscal year ends June 30th.
Okay.
So we have to have this. The budget we're working on now must be ready to fly July 1st, or we will not have a budget. And I don't think that's ever happened in the state of Colorado.
Okay.
I think we've always had a budget ready. So theoretically, we want to have it done within the next few weeks here, but at the same time, if people are sick and we cannot reconvene, it won't happen in right away or in early April.
Okay, so then let's say if you didn't get the budget done, tell us about a special session then, because they'd probably have to do that, wouldn't they, to get this passed, or what would happen?
Yes, and that is actually on the table as well. If we cannot come back, if additional shelter-in-place type orders come down as part of the governor's executive order ability, and we cannot reconvene, then if we do get to the end of the session and we are done for the year, yes, the governor can call a special session, and he can just do it by executive order. But he has to have it for a specific reason. It cannot just be a continuation of the current session. It must be a special session. When our current session ends, all the bills currently there just die. Everything just dies on the calendar. The special session has to be for a specific reason. And in this case, I think it would be to pass a budget. And so we would be dealing only with the budget and then budget-related bills. You know, we have what are called orbital bills, where sometimes we have to pass a bill just to allocate or move money, because sometimes things have to be done statutorily. Like when we transfer money to and from capital development or to and from a statutory reserve, that like the educational reserve fund, those types of things, we need to have an orbital bill that comes alongside the long bill.
Okay. So, Kim Ransom, this session is supposed to adjourn on May 6th. Now, can you continue out on that, or does it stop on May 6th?
Well, historically, it's always adjourned 120 days after it started. The Constitution says 120 calendar days is all that the legislature can run, and then it must adjourn. The issue is, are calendar days consecutive? Now, historical precedent would say yes, they always have been. The Constitution says calendar days. We have always, as long as I've been involved in politics, that's always meant calendar days. However, consecutive calendar days is what it's always meant.
Okay.
Well, we have turned in an interrogatory request to the state Supreme Court asking for an opinion to see if the fact that we have stopped for a period of 2 weeks, which will, as I've said, will likely be extended to 3 or more weeks, can then we start and stop that 120-day process. That is still up in the air until the state Supreme Court comes back with their interrogatory, with their opinion, with their response to us. We won't know if we can go past the 6th or not.
Now, I thought there was some kind of statute that said it was consecutive days. Am I incorrect on that?
Well, that is still up in the air. I believe that the word is actually calendar days. But again, because I looked this up yesterday, and it's calendar. But again, it's always been the historical precedent back to, I think, the late 80s have always meant consecutive. And by the way, when they passed the original law that said 120 days in a row is all that the legislature can last, one of the sponsors on that was our former Senator Wayne Allard, who is actually going to be offering part of the opinion, saying that those days were meant to be consecutive, not just calendar days that can start and stop at will.
Okay, well, that's going to be really interesting, because I see something I think very positive about this. And that is that if a bill has not been voted on, passed up to the governor's desk and signed into law, it very well may die. And there is a lot of really overreaching things that have been proposed. And so I find that very positive. And then we've always talked about limiting government. This is kind of a self-limiting thing with the edicts from Polis and Hancock, because I'm sure our sales tax revenues are going to be down significantly. And so, you know, the lowered revenue means that there's going to have to be some choices made on how that money is spent. And I think that this is, you know, that's a couple of positive things. Kim Ransom, your final thought.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think that is very well stated. And don't forget, not just sales tax revenue will be down, income tax revenue will be down too, because people will have lower incomes even if they're just out of work for a few weeks or a month.
You know, and with
revenue all told.
Mm-hmm. There is one caution that I would like to make sure that we have on our listeners' minds, and that is the progressives are going to try to have a ballot question. In fact, we'll be talking with Rick Turnquist about this, that would be a quote-unquote progressive income tax. So it would be, you know, taxing the rich, and that is never a good idea. So I think that, you know, there might be some politics that are being played on all this as well, with all the hurt that is being fomented upon people from these. I really think that they're overreaching. I think a more measured response on this, Kim Ransom, by the governor and by the mayor would have been, you know, we don't quite know what's going on out there. We're going to take a two-week cautionary pause here, and then we'll reassess. But instead, when you say we're closing something for 8 weeks or, you know, till April 30th, that really scares people, and I'm very concerned about that that particular narrative. So, Kim Ransom, anything else you want to say?
I just want to thank the taxpayers once again and the voters for voting down Rep. CC last November. I'm so glad that you, the voters, and the taxpayers of Colorado, you know, have that extra money in your pockets versus the government having it. So thank you to the taxpayers once again.
Well,
and the voters.
And thank you, Kim Ransom, Colorado representative, and for all the time you're spending on the Joint Budget Committee. We're going to talk to you again next Tuesday morning at the same mm-hmm. time for an update. So stay calm and carry on, Kim Ransom.
You do the same. Thank you so much, Kim. Have a great day.
Okay, thanks so much. Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management. Welcome to the show. How are you doing this morning, Jason?
Oh, good morning, Kim. Well, it's cold, and we got our big March snow, huh?
You know, it's a beautiful, life-giving snow. It's that heavy moisture, you know, which I always look at these as life-giving snows. I also, you know, I'm from rural Kansas. It always seems to be that cows birth their calves during snowstorms. I don't know why that's the case, but that always seems to be the case, Jason McBride.
Well, you know, and I always try to get a good shot of fertilizer and crabgrass killer on my lawn early, and I did it like 2 days before, so this giant, huge snow will just water it right in.
You are so smart. So
I tell you what, that was lucky timing.
Now you could just say you're brilliant, Jason.
Well, yeah. I could, but I'd be full of it, so I'm full of it anyway. You know that, but...
Well, what about the market? It's been so crazy. What's give us a market update.
Well, I think there's a couple of interesting things. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I see a little bit of positive here in the last 3 days. NASDAQ on Wednesday had a nice up day. It was up about 6%. And then Thursday we got beat up again, but we had a nice rally at the end of the day. And the NASDAQ closed in the upper part of its range for the day. And then yesterday, we had a pretty decent up day, again, with the market closing in the upper part of its range. So this is a market to me that looks like it's trying to find a bottom. If we could get another really powerful up day, you know, either today or Monday or Tuesday, sometime in the next few days, and the NASDAQ would hold above the low it made on Thursday, then I think we might be in for some kind of a bounce or a rally. I don't know if it'd be the complete bottom, because you never know what kind of news could come out to mess us up again, Kim. But the action over the last 3 days I have found interesting, and I think there's some buyers coming back in.
Well, and the thing about it is American business is really kind of on sale right now because of this pressure in the stock market. And so there's very good companies that you can buy at a much cheaper price than a few weeks ago. And so I think that sitting down with you and your colleagues at Presidential Wealth Management, you know, and really taking a look at opportunities right now is a really good idea, Jason McBride.
Well, I think, yeah, it's going to be hard to sit down with us
because
we're not having people in the office, but I know what you mean. It's a good time to look at things, and again, if you have some cash laying around, and Britt Hume said it very well the other night. He said, if you have some cash, some guts, and some time, this might be a good time to think about adding in a little to good, solid American businesses that are on sale and, you know, are unlikely to shutter their doors permanently.
So a conversation with you, Jason, and your colleagues, you can reach you at 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600, or go to our landing page. That's AIR, AIRpresidential.com, AIRpresidential.com.
That's right. Now, Kim, do you have another minute? I wanted to give a shout-out to a couple of businesses that I found to be very positive recently. If you don't, we could do it Monday.
You know what? Go ahead and do that. I've got Rick Turnquest waiting, but I like the good news, so let's hear it.
Oh, well, Rick's a good guy, too. He'll converse with us. So a couple of things I've run into recently. Number one, the Big O here off of Castle Pines. There's a young kid there. I think he's the manager. His name's Steven, and he's just excellent. You know, the management there, the ownership changed, and I'll say it was a little bumpy over there for a couple of years, but this young kid, Steven, at the Big O Tires off I-25 in Castle Pines, he is a really, really good guy. He remembers things. He takes care of you, makes you feel really, really comfortable, and I think he's to be commended.
Great. So Steven at Big O Tires. And
that's right. And then King Supers, also here in Castle Rock. I went over yesterday morning right when they opened, Kim. I just wanted to see what the store looked like, you know, to kind of get a gauge. And I'll tell you, the people working there did such a good job while people were waiting for the doors to open. I think, you know, a couple of the managers were out there. They were talking to everybody when the doors opened. You know, it wasn't a stampede. It wasn't insane. They really handled things well. And, you know, with the craziness, I think they're doing just a great job up there. And, it was just interesting to see that. And also to the people, there were probably about 100 people came in. And, you know, to all of us, it was neat to see. Nobody was fighting over things or being rude or freaking out. It was just very cool.
Well, and just to add on to that, I stopped at the Walmart over on Hamden after I left the studio yesterday afternoon. And, again, the people that were working there, so nice and so courteous, as well as the patrons. It was a really good experience. And driving over here this morning, I saw trucks that were out there delivering goods to different businesses. And we need to thank our trucking industry and these truckers that are working so hard. We are truly blessed on all that. So, Jason McBride, thank you for those positive thoughts.
Yeah, let's stay positive, and let's hope the market is positive. Today, the futures are up 350 as of right now on
okay.
the Dow.
Well, we're going to go to break, and when we come back, Rick Turnquest, he is an author and blogger, and he writes contributes to our writer circle. He's written a really important piece. It's called Punishing Success, and we're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be right back with Rick Turnquest.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That is kimmunson.com, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And in fact, Punishing Success, Rick Turnquist, very important op-ed is at my website, kimmunson.com. Rick Turnquist, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Kim, and thank you for hosting me this morning. It's unfortunate we're not able to be together in studio, but it's nice to have the technology to be able to call in.
I'm very grateful for that, Rick Turnquist, but I love it when you're in studio, so we'll do that next month. But this piece that you have written, you do such a great job in taking a narrative and really explaining what's going to happen. So where do you want to start with this piece that you've done, Punishing Success?
Well, I kind of actually want to start off with just a comment to add on to what Jason was talking about just now, and add my thanks and kudos for King Soopers and Walmart and Target and all the people who are hardworking people who are getting up and going to work every day through the midst of this crisis and really keeping us alive with the keeping items on the shelves. And I recognize, I haven't seen any people being ugly. I've seen people being polite. I've seen people that are giving each other space and all that. So I just want to extend my kudos to my fellow Coloradans and all of our grocery store workers as well.
Yes, most definitely. Thank you to all of you hardworking Coloradans out there. So and being industrious, working hard, are some of the ingredients for success, for people to get ahead, to start to create wealth. And it looks like there may be those in Colorado that are going to try to have something on the ballot this November that would punish hard work and being industrious and taking risk.
Yeah, that's so true. And so we talked about, when I wrote the blog, The Battles Ahead, I talked about this group called Vision 2020, and the groups involved in that are the Bell Policy Center and the Colorado Fiscal Institute and several of the other, if you listen to their meeting that I linked in that blog piece, there's several other groups that are involved in that. Part of the progressive infrastructure I wrote about last year and published on my blog, To Advance Freedom. And, they've dropped the idea of putting a repeal of Tabor on the ballot because they know that would fail. But what they want to put on the ballot instead. And so now this initiative 271 is out for signatures right now. So I'd encourage all of your listeners to if they're asked to sign this initiative 271 about policy changes pertaining to state income taxes, to politely say no to the signature gatherer and walk away, because this one's immoral and will produce unintended consequences.
And so be sure and just say no to that. And bear in mind that typically these petition gatherers are paid per signature that they receive. And so just say no when you are asked to sign that one. But on the other hand, due date too late was a totally organic, no paid signatures. This is hopefully going to be on the ballot regarding no abortions after 22 weeks with just kind of some limited things on that. So, but on this one, say no to number 271, policy changes pertaining to state income taxes. So why should we say no, Rick?
Well, currently in Colorado, we have what's known as a flat income tax. And basically what that means is every person who earns money in Colorado that pays Colorado income taxes is taxed at a flat rate of 4.63%. And when the... So just a little bit of historical note here, Kim. The last time that the Democrats had full control of our state legislature back in the 1930s, in 1937, they enacted the income tax in Colorado. And at first, it was a graduated income tax rate, just like the federal government has. And then back in the 1980s, I wrote about the history of this in one of my other blogs, but back in the 1980s, that was set at a flat rate of 5%, and then it was lowered, thanks to Tabor, to the current 4.63%. But under the Initiative 271, if that goes into effect, what would happen is a graduated tax is imposed on federal taxable income as determined pursuant to 63 of the Internal Revenue Code of every individual estate and trust, with greater tax rates applying to higher income brackets. And each tax rate applying only to the income bracket for that tax rate as follows. And so for federal taxable income up to $250,000, the Colorado income tax rate would go down slightly to 4.58%. But look out, if you earn more than $250,001 up to $500,000 a year, your Colorado income tax rate goes up to 7%. If you earn over $500,001 to $1,000,000, your income tax rate is 7.75%. And people earning over $1,000,000 a year, and in my table in the blog, there's in 2016, there's 1,200 people that were in that bracket. They would pay a surtax of $67,000 plus 8.91% of the amount over $1,000,000. Now, I'm an accountant, and I can do math pretty darn well. And when I calculated what that tax rate is for those people, it's actually 15.68%. And that's just unconscionable. And these rates would be subject to adjustment every year by this percentage change in Colorado personal income. This initiative would also create a so-called Fair Tax Review Commission, and nobody can see my air quotes, but I'm doing that. 25 members appointed by legislative leadership and the governor. And, of course, all the appointments have to check all the left's favorite identity politics checkboxes. The initiative says, in making appointments, the governor shall ensure that the membership of the commission includes persons who reflect the ethnic, cultural, and gender diversity of the state, and, to the extent practicable, persons with disabilities. And the commission will be charged with reporting prior to a date, 10, 11 years from now. State revenue and funding for public services provided by the state, distribution of income among taxpayers, and the business climate, or the ability of the state to attract and retain business. And I would just say as a side note, based on the way our current legislature is going, Colorado is becoming more unfriendly to business all the time. So that would be an interesting report.
But I thought that we're supposed to be a representative government.
Well,
This is unelected people that's going to be making these decisions. They're unelected,
right.
Unaccountable bureaucrats. And to get 25 people to agree on something is pretty tricky. But the fact that they're not accountable to the voter, just say no on that. Just say no on that. Gee.
Yeah, for that alone.
Yes.
And so this, and the Colorado Sun wrote an article, I linked it. It's very, I think it's very biased in favor of this initiative, and I find that disappointing. And that's why I didn't, talk about it further or reference specific things. But according to that article, they say this tax code change is expected to raise an estimated $2 billion in new tax revenues. And according to the language of the initiative, at least 50% of these new revenues are going to be allocated to education, as usual. To recruit, retain, and pay teachers and student service providers. Then the other 50% goes to a vague and undefined purpose, which is to be appropriated and expended to address the impacts of a growing population and a changing economy. So they're not even, they're not even using the usual false flag of transportation or anything else. It's just, $1 billion to just whatever. And, you had Kim Ransom on earlier in the show today, and we're so lucky to have her as our representative and to have her serving on the Joint Budget Committee, because she gives us really good insights into that. But, I did an extensive amount of research on the budget last fall, and I have my spreadsheet open right now on my monitor. And, the Colorado state budget's grown by an average of 6% over the last 10 years. And, when she's
each
talking
year,
about
is that her, year over year?
Year over year, yeah.
Wow.
And, it's really amazing, isn't it? And, that's faster than inflation. That's faster than wage growth. That's the rate it's going. So the fact that, they're not going to have enough time to pass a lot more bills, and this virus is a terrible thing, but people look for silver linings, and you know, the fact that they are out of session for a while is in my opinion, one silver lining.
So Rick, just a quick comment. So number two reason to vote against this is because the 50% of the money is vague. It has an undefined purpose. And also, I probably some things in the other 50% when they say recruit, retain, pay teachers and student service providers. I mean, that's pretty vague as well. But Rick, we need to go to a quick break. Stay through the break, and we'll continue on with this very important piece that you can find at kimmunson.com, and that is Punishing Success. This is a very important piece by Rick Turnquist. We will be right back.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. On the line with me is Rick Turnquist. Go to my website, Kim Munson, MONSON.com, to read Rick's op-ed, Punishing Success. And just very quickly, Rick, I think that one of the narratives out there on trying to get this thing passed is that the rich should pay their fair share. So what they're doing, I think, is really insidious. They're saying for 95% of the people out there, you're going to get an income decrease, and then we're going to increase the taxes on the rich. You have a table in your op-ed that really talks about this, explains it. But talk about this whole fair share, people paying their fair share narrative.
Okay, well, that's a great point. And that's why I think this is kind of actually an immoral concept, because, you know, people who earn more money by definition pay more in taxes. And if you look at this table, this table is Colorado government data, which I just I added a calculation at the bottom of the table and hid some columns to make it fit on the page here. But, this table shows that in 2016, which is the last year the data is available for, there's 1,199 people who earned $1 million and over. And I would be willing to bet my next paycheck that Polis and Stryker and Tim Gill and Rhett Bridges are four of those 1,199 people who earned more than $1 million. And they, you know, that's only 0.8% of total returns, but they pay 8% of the total taxes paid in the state. And if you look at the top 1.22%, which is people earning $200,000 and over, and let's face it, you know, a professional couple that both have good jobs are going to be in that bracket. They're going to earn over $200,000 a year, or have federal ADI of over $200,000 a year. That makes up the top three brackets are 20% of the taxpayers, and they pay a disproportionate amount of tax.
Right. So the top 1.22% would pay almost 20% of the income tax. That doesn't seem fair to me.
Yeah, and that's with a flat rate. So what they want to do is they want to grossly punish people who earn more than $1 million a year. And, when you think about that, you know, people respond to incentives. And, you know, this is why when progressives always want to raise taxes, on the successful, because it's, as you and I have talked about, their politics is based on envy. and greed, really. And they think that these people are going to just sit around and happily pay more in taxes than they need to. And the fact of the matter is that wealthy people have the means to live anywhere they want. And, you know, I can't plug this book enough. It's called An Inquiry into the Nature and Causes of the Wealth of States and How Taxes, Energy, and Worker Freedom Change Everything. And there's documented proof in this book that states that have higher income tax regimes do more poorly economically than states that don't have income taxes. And Colorado in so many ways is just going in the wrong direction. So now if this thing passes, you know, wealthy people will find themselves being punished for their success. And what's going to happen? They're going to take their money, they're going to take their homes, and they're going to take their incomes, their adjusted gross incomes, and they're going to leave the state altogether. So instead of and not everybody will. Some people will stay no matter what. Just, you know, grin and bear it, or find
they
tax
may have family here,
strategies.
Whatever. Yeah, right.
Yeah, or they'll find tax avoidance strategies, which are available because it's all based on federal taxable income. But, you know, they'll find ways to lower their tax bills, or they'll move out of the state altogether. So this dream of an extra $2 billion to spend, you know, 50% of it in some random slush fund, you know, it's just not going to materialize because people aren't going to voluntarily pay out more taxes. And if the Gang of Four wants to pay more taxes, then they're certainly willing, you know, they're certainly have
they
the ability to write
in.
A check to the Treasury. Yep. And anybody that wants to pay more in taxes can write a check to the Treasury. Yeah. I mean, it's.
Yeah, but actually, typically, they don't want to pay more in taxes. They just want somebody else to do that.
Exactly.
And, you know, Rick, Colorado had been boasting a very good economy until we had these edicts from Governor Polis and Mayor Hancock, which has really shut down business. I really think they could have had a much more measured approach to this whole Wuhan virus thing. But one of the things that has, I think, been a real contributing factor of which these radical activist Dems have wanted to take credit for the economy, but it is the fact that we have had Tabor, Colorado's Taxpayers Bill of Rights, that has at least kept this whole government taxation and intervention somewhat checked. And they like to say it's because of them, but I would submit it to you, it's because we have had the Colorado Taxpayers Bill of Rights, and we have had a flat and fair tax.
Yes, I agree, Kim. They boast about the great economy in Colorado, and Colorado's economy, as we looked at it in another blog post, is doing well, but it's not certainly the top economy in the state, and it is due to Tabor that we are as successful as we are. But they want to do away with Tabor, and they're going to take a repeal off the ballot because they know it won't pass, but they're going to try this insidious and immoral tax increase on the rich instead. And I think it's just ugly. And, you know, when you talk about income taxes, you know, punishing the people who earn that much money, you know, these people are successful business owners, and these businesses provide jobs to Coloradans. These are, you know, sports stars. There are people who are, you know, maybe a successful physician or, a successful entrepreneur of some nature, a successful investor, or in the case of Pat Stryker, somebody who earned or inherited their billions and didn't do anything to earn it. So, you know, these people are being punished unjustly for the fact that they have more income than other people, and I find that to be gross. And let's face it, you know, in the United States, you know, our income tax started in 1913 with a 1% tax on net personal incomes over $3,000, which is $78,000 in today's dollars. With a surtax, which, Initiative 271 has, of 6% on incomes over $500,000. And the tax bracket, you know, it never stays the way it is when it's enacted.
So right.
The tax rate for the top bracket continued to grow until it was 92% in 1950. And now it's 37%. But if Initiative 271 passes, a person in Colorado earning $1 million or more would have to pay a combined 52.58% income tax, which represents over half of what they earn. And I ask the question, how can it be right or moral to make somebody 50% a slave simply by a majority vote of the people? And that's where I think I would wrap it up for that discussion is how can you make somebody half a slave simply because the majority votes that way? And that's why I encourage everybody to vote no or to not sign this thing. And if it does get on the ballot, to vote no.
Okay, very important piece, Rick Turnquist. It's at my website, kimmunson.com. It's Punishing Success. And you alluded to it. Under socialism, it's something that's based on envy, that wants to take other people's stuff because they envy it and they don't want them to have it. Whereas with capitalism and the American idea, it's you look at somebody that's very successful instead of wanting to take their stuff or say they can't have it, as you say, if they did it, I can do it. So let's be industrious and let's work hard, which is the American idea. Rick Turnquist, it's always just such a treat to have you on the show. I love it when you're in studio, so hopefully we'll get to do that again next month. But thank you so much for this very important piece.
Well, thank you, Kim, and stay healthy and safe.
Okay. And today, my friends, be grateful. Read great books. Think good thoughts. Listen to beautiful music. Communicate and listen well. Live honestly and authentically. Strive for high ideals and, like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you and God bless America. Twisting, turning further from my home. Young, like a new moon rising, fierce through the rain and lightning, wandering out into this grave. And I don't want no one to cry, but tell them if I don't serve.